Today, we're zeroing in on one incredibly evocative work of art. It's housed in the Museo Garnello, Jose Garnello's painting, Death of Lucan. And this isn't just, standard art appreciation. It's more like stepping through a painted doorway right into a crucial moment in Roman history.
Yeah, it really feels like that.
A scene just brimming with detail, and it's deeply connected to the enduring power of, well, a single celebrated poem.
Lucan's Pharsalia.
Exactly. So we're going to really get into the layers of this painting, the fascinating historical figures you see within it, and the lasting impact of Lucan's literary creation.
Think of this as your kind of private guided exploration.
Yeah, a truly powerful scene, and it's really rich historical backdrop.
And it's particularly fitting that we're focusing on this today, April 30th, 2025. It actually marks the 1860th anniversary of Lucan's death.
Wow, 1860 years.
Yeah, it's a date that naturally draws his memory into sharp focus, especially, at the Museo Garnello.
Right.
And what's fascinating here, I think, is the profound dedication of Lucan's wife, Pola Argenteria. She was absolutely committed to ensuring his intellectual legacy endured.
That quote attributed to her is just
It
incredible.
really is. No muere el hombre si su muerte vive. The man does not die if his death lives. It just perfectly encapsulates her unwavering commitment, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. And you almost feel that commitment radiating from Garnello's canvas. It's like each brushstroke is a testament to Pola's determination, to keep Lucan's genius alive. Okay, let's really unpack this then. Garnello's artistic choices here are so compelling. You mentioned Pola. While she isn't right in the dead center of the composition, she undeniably commands our attention.
She really
The
does.
cut we looked at highlights the freshness he brings to this, well, historical
Yeah,
tragedy.
it doesn't feel like a stuffy historical painting somehow.
No, exactly. And it's interesting to note Garnello's sort of recurring tendency to depict women possessing significant moral or intellectual strength, even if they aren't the absolute central figure.
That's a really good point. If you look across his work, that pattern does emerge quite clearly, doesn't it?
It does.
And in Death of Lucan, I mean, despite the title focusing on Lucan, Pola's placement in the foreground, almost at the very heart of the scene, your gaze just goes right to her.
Instantly.
Her expression, too, it's described as a blend of serene pain and brave resistance. It just sets this potent emotional atmosphere that really permeates the entire painting.
It truly does. And her posture is so telling, isn't it? The way she leans over Lucan, almost like she's about to receive his final breath.
Yeah.
That's not just a tender gesture, right? It's deeply rooted in ancient Roman tradition.
Exactly. The idea of the closest relative, the closest kin, safeguarding the departing soul.
So Garnello's making her the guardian.
Precisely. Through Garnello's interpretation, Pola becomes the very guardian of the vital breath. And this connects so directly to the tragic circumstances of Lucan's death, forced by Nero.
Right, imposed by Nero.
It's as though she's trying to shield not just his memory, but maybe a fragment of his actual essence from the emperor's reach.
Now, focusing on Lucan himself on that deathbed, the account draws our attention to that subtle detail, the way his arm is beginning to lose its horizontal position.
Just starting to droop.
It seems like such a minor element, but it really enhances the painting's perspective, doesn't it? And that feeling of life just inexorably slipping away.
It does. And it's a chilling thought, too, that he chose the manner of his death. And then recited lines from his own Pharsalia.
About a dying soldier.
Yeah, about a dying soldier, as his own life was ending.
Where does that detail come from?
That's from Suetonius, and it's incredibly poignant, I think. It speaks volumes about Lucan's deep connection to his own writing, finding this, grim parallel for his own end right there in his epic poem.
It's a powerful illustration of how intertwined his life and his art really were.
Definitely.
Okay, so just beside Lucan, we see Marco Annio Milla. That's his father. His background is pretty remarkable, too. Born in Cordoba, part of this incredibly influential family, the Ann. Seneca the Younger, Miro's tutor, was his brother. Seneca the Elder.
An intellectual powerhouse family,
No.
and he brought them to Rome seeking, greater social standing.
Yeah. But as the account we read put it so well, Rome, this labyrinth of ambitions and shadows, ultimately became the stage for tragedy within his family.
It really did. And in Garnello's depiction, Mela has the recognizable features of his brother Seneca. His posture just conveys this deep lament. What's particularly compelling is the interpretation of his expression as one of regret, perhaps You know, regret for leaving the relative peace of Cordoba, a longing for the life Lucan might have lived.
That's a powerful reading. And it adds another layer of sorrow when you remember Mela's own tragic fate later on.
Yeah, accused in the same Pisonian conspiracy as Lucan, he also ended up taking his own life.
Such a tragic family story.
And then we have Marco Valerio Martialis, Lucan's friend, standing near Mela. He looks utterly disconsolate.
Right. And it's important to remember Martialis, the poet. He'd later play a crucial role in preserving Lucan's memory.
Exactly. Through the poems he recited at those anniversary commemorations that Pola so diligently organized year after year.
Yeah, and the account quotes Martialis's powerful words, acknowledging Pola's unwavering dedication and directly condemning Nero for his cruelty.
He clearly held Lucan in the highest esteem. Considered him the, you know, the preeminent poet of their generation.
Okay, then there's this other figure, Estacio Aneo. He's kind of enigmatic, isn't he?
Very. Likely the physician. He's positioned with his back to us, dramatically lit by this strong light source leaning against the bathtub.
His history is fascinating, too. A freed slave from Greece, skilled in medicine.
Yeah, it adds another layer to the whole scene.
And there's speculation, right, that he might have been a friend of Seneca, Lucan's uncle.
Mm-hmm. And perhaps even present at both Seneca's and Lucan's final moments.
A sobering thought.
It really is. And the account highlights the magnificent anatomical study of his torso, even compares it to Velasquez.
It's that incredible meticulousness, that detail,
mm-hmm.
that makes the painting so captivating, I think.
Absolutely. And surrounding this central group, you have the predators and friends. Their figures are kind of receding into the background.
Conveying this sense of solemn resignation.
Exactly. They embody that weight of duty and loyalty in this, well, profoundly tragic moment. Even their clothes, the account notes, have this remarkable realism, this tactile richness.
It shows Garnello's deep understanding of the classical world.
No question.
And we can't forget Pola's assistant, just a shadowy presence in the background.
Adds an element of mystery, maybe? A hint of the wider, darker realities around this private scene.
So the painting is populated by these incredibly realized figures, but it's also just packed with symbolism, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. At the foot of the bed, you see the winged sphinx.
Classic symbol of death.
Right. Then the laurel wreath that signifies Lucan's poetic glory, even right there at his end.
And the chains.
Likely representing resistance against Nero's tyranny. A really powerful visual statement.
Okay. And the burning brazier. That's interpreted as the soul departing.
Yeah, a visual representation of the soul leaving the body. Very evocative. The amphorae make you think of Socrates and the hemlock.
Suggesting a chosen, principled death.
Exactly. And perhaps most poignantly, you see the papyrus scroll of Pharsalia lying there on the mosaic floor.
A silent witness.
A silent but powerful witness to Lucan's immortal work and his, well, his eloquent final moments reciting from it.
So these objects aren't just decoration.
Not at all. They are absolutely integral to grasping the deeper meaning Garnello is trying to convey. They enrich the whole narrative, connecting it to these big themes: life, death, art, resistance.
Okay, so to really appreciate the weight of this painting, we need to understand a bit more about Lincoln's life, the circumstances around his death.
Definitely. His early relationship with Nero was actually quite good, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was in favor initially, even dedicated poems to him. But then it soured really quickly.
Fueled by Nero's intense jealousy of Lucan's poetic talent.
Right. Which led to those devastating prohibitions he couldn't publish, couldn't speak publicly, couldn't even practice law.
Total clampdown. And this envy, this suppression, ultimately drove Lucan to get involved in the Pisonian conspiracy.
A plot to overthrow Nero.
Which, when it was exposed, the consequences were brutal and swift. Forced suicide.
At just 25.
Tragically young. It's such a stark reminder of the danger artistic talent faced under an autocratic regime like Nero's.
And from this tragically short life emerged Pharsalia, also known as De Bellum Civil, his epic poem about the Roman civil war between Caesar and Pompey.
And the account emphasizes just how revolutionary this work actually was. It wasn't just another historical account put into verse.
No, it was genuinely groundbreaking in several ways, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Lucan essentially pioneered the historical epic, really prioritizing factual accuracy in a way that hadn't quite been done before in epic poetry.
And he deliberately left out the gods, right?
Exactly. A huge departure from traditional epic convention. No divine intervention. Instead, he focused on rational explanations, on human agency.
And no single hero either.
Right. Pharsalia lacks that conventional mythological hero. It centers its narrative more on abstract ideas, fate, freedom, the consequences of human actions.
The poem celebrated for the majesty and intonation of its verse,
yeah,
its daring metaphors, its rich diction.
He stands out as a brave denouncer of tyranny, and Pharsalia really reflects the intellectual currents of his time.
It's pretty remarkable that even someone like Dante Alighieri held Lucan in such high regard.
Placing him among the greatest poets of antiquity in the Inferno, that tells you a lot about Lucan's enduring literary impact.
And his influence didn't stop there.
No, not at all. The account mentions later figures like Montaigne, Marmontel, and Unamuno. They were all deeply affected by Pharsalia.
Unamuno felt that really strong connection, didn't he, calling him our Lucan the Spaniard?
Yeah, and drawing parallels between the spirit of Pharsalia and Don Quixote, it really underscores the lasting relevance of his work.
And it's crucial to remember, Pharsalia is the only complete work of Lucan's that survived.
The only one we have. Makes it even more precious.
Okay, let's circle back to Pola Argenteria for a moment. She's described as a beautiful woman with notable intellectual interests, raised in a cultured environment. Clearly much more than just Lucan's wife.
Oh, absolutely. She had an outstanding personality, apparently kept her charm even later in life, and attracted this distinguished circle of intellectual women around her.
And there's even a suggestion she wrote poetry herself.
Yeah, from the poet Stasis. He hinted she composed and sang verses, so possibly artistic talents of her own.
But beyond that, her unwavering fidelity and courage in celebrating Lupin's memory after his death.
Mm-hmm.
That's truly remarkable.
Especially given the political risks involved under Nero and even after, she wasn't just a grieving widow. She was a woman of significant independent standing in Roman society.
Her origins are interesting, too, possibly from the mining region of the Alcudia Valley near Sisepo.
Right. With her family maybe having risen to equestrian rank, that's a pretty significant social standing through the silver trade.
And her father had connections to prominent Cordoban families, yeah, including the Annie Lucan's family.
Which probably explains how she and Lucan met. And those verses attributed to Pola about Lucan's death.
Mm.
They're incredibly moving.
The imagery, the white roses, and the purple of the deathbed.
It's precisely that kind of potent language that Gornello, who the account rightly calls the most cultured painter of his time, just masterfully brings to life in his painting.
It's like his brushstrokes are translating her poetic lament directly onto the canvas.
Exactly, a visual echo of her words.
So as we bring our deep dive towards a close, we've really explored so much within this single powerful painting, haven't we?
We really have. Gornello's striking depiction of Lucan's tragic end.
The poignant and incredibly resolute figure of Pola Argenteria, and her enduring devotion.
The revolutionary and influential legacy of Lucan's Pharsalia.
And just the rich tapestry of historical and cultural context that surrounds this whole event.
And ultimately, Gornello's death of Lucan really stands as this powerful testament, doesn't it? To the lasting strength of memory, the profound depths of love, and the enduring impact of literary genius.
All captured within one unforgettable visual narrative.
Mm.
It really makes you think, doesn't it?
Yeah.
About the profound way art can function as this incredible form of historical preservation. It goes way beyond just recording events.
It captures the emotional and intellectual currents of a time.
Exactly, which Gornello masterfully achieved here with Death of Lucan.
Yeah.
Kind of leaves you wondering, what other pivotal historical moments might be illuminated, you know, by such dedicated and insightful artistic interpretation?